We'd like to welcome everyone tonight to Karen Scholl's Teleseminar. I'm Melinda Garish with Cutting Up Stables here in Shirley, Indiana, and we thank everybody for joining us tonight, and thanks for submitting all those questions. And don't ever think that any of those questions are silly questions or stupid ones, because as I go through them, I'm seeing duplicate questions being asked. So we're getting those picked up as we can, and we appreciate you turning in tonight. So, Karen, the topics tonight that we're going to be discussing is the first one's going to be who is leading who, and then we're going to go into tying troubles, bolting, a mouthy gelding, and clinic fright. So we'll go ahead and get started, and like I said, we've got several people with the same topic. I've got a couple here in particular that's having some leading issues. One is from Mary Gear, and the other one is from Colleen Nelson. And I'll go ahead and read Mary's first. It says, "Hello, I help out at a barn where 15 horses are boarded. One is a pony that I need to lead to his pasture area about 250 yards from the barn. This pony has not had a lot of work, and he does a lot wrong on the ground. He crowds, he pulls the lead away, he shies at this and that, and crashes into you. He also wants to walk directly behind me. I'm always trying to get him to walk to the side, but not effectively. I don't have much time to work with this pony. I have two of my own horses that I'm trying to find time to work with. Just bought two of your DVDs to help. Any suggestions for what to do with this pony while I'm walking him to and fro? I'm always a little afraid I'm going to get hurt by this guy, and he's the smallest one on the farm." And since she's wrote, she also emailed back that she did get the two videos, Cornerstone for Communication and Trailer Loading, and she says she thinks they're terrific, and she sees that you're coming to Connecticut and hoping to attend your seminar. Saw your demos at Equine Affair.
Okay. And it's Mary, is that right?
That is, yes, this one's from Mary.
Yeah. You know, it's always interesting because it's kind of a, you know, horses are challenging enough to hold the communication, the type of communication a horse can recognize, respect, and respond to. But it's further challenged when it's not your horse because it's a little bit like, you know, being responsible for other people's children. It's, you know, what do you do? How far do you go? You know, that kind of a thing. And then the children or the horse, you know, go back to the owners or go back, you know, to the situation. So, you know, coming again from this position of leadership, when I'm interacting with horse, when I come into that horse's circle of influence, you can call it that, I step in as a lead horse. So when that horse comes in too close to me, they're going to run into pressure. If a horse pulls away from me, I'm going to get effective and tip that horse's nose back to me. And when that horse recognizes that I have that skill and ability to communicate what it is I want them to do by the release of the pressure, then the horse is allowed to make different choices. So, you know, horses and children are very quick to recognize when we have leadership and when we do not. So those two videos that you have, Mary, are just going to be ideal for you to practice those techniques first with your own horses and then just take a little bit of time with the pony. And, you know, because when you go to help at a barn and you're doing things, your goal is to get from A to B, but you need just a little bit of time, and I'm not saying an hour or 2 hours or weeks or anything like that. I'm saying just go into an area where you can communicate with this pony, where you can back the pony up, where you can move the pony's hip over a step, move the front end, you know, mainly back them up and then have them follow a feel. So if you spent 15 minutes with the pony, with those techniques, the pony would go, oh, okay, you got the deal. And I'll tell you, ponies, it's really an interesting thing that I found. I've done an informal survey all over the country, and I'll ask audiences to raise their hand if they have ever observed a group of horses with a pony or a miniature in it, in the mix, and is that individual the lead horse in the herd? And almost every single time, people will just go, absolutely. The smallest horse in there is oftentimes the lead horse. And you'll see this with dogs also. The little dogs boss the big dogs around. It's really an amazing factor in there. And so ponies, are so smart, they're so quick, and I think what happens with us is we tend to underestimate them. And so that position of leadership with ponies is every bit as important, if not more so, to prove to that pony that you're as quick, as smart, as aware as another horse would be. So that position of leadership is, that game is going all the time, just like it is with kids. And, you know, it's just like when you're a kid and you had a substitute teacher, you know, how long did it take you to recognize if that person had leadership or not? You know, usually from the door to the desk, you could tell if this was going to be, you know, oh, man, we're going to have fun with this one, or, man, we better shape up and, you know, do what she says or he says. So that's how horses sizes up as well. And it's nothing personal, but when I step into a demo or I handle a horse or I'm around any horse, that regardless of the scenario, regardless of the history, I'm doing my best to demonstrate leadership in that position. And leadership is not, you know, being, you know, a big meanie, you know, big mean jelly bean. It's not that. It's just I'm going to communicate an expectation. If I walk, you walk with me. If I stop, you stop. If you don't stop, then you're going to run into pressure. And that's where on my videos I show different techniques, using different tools and extensions of your arm or even your own body to communicate to the horse where your bubble of personal space is. And it's critical. I cannot emphasize it enough for these horses. The other thing that's going to make a real difference is the tools. And especially with ponies, small horses, or usually ponies have a heavier neck, ponies, mules, some Mustangs, depending on the build, they'll learn that if you put them under pressure, they'll turn their nose and take the rope right out of your hands. And this pony sounds like that's, and I'm just guessing, people call me psychic sometimes, like, how did you know that? If you start communicating to that pony that you're in the lead position, sometimes those ponies, they'll just turn and drag a rope right out of your hand, and now they're running around the property. So they kind of train us not to do too much either. So that's why I start with, you know, just a 15, 20-minute session with a pony, get the owner's permission, of course, and teach the pony to keep both eyes on you and teach the pony through the pressure and the release of pressure to stay out of your personal space, number one. And then teach the pony to lead by leading with it and, again, finding the release when it comes forwards, but not running past you or running through you or turning the nose and heading out. So the position on your rope is going to be important. The pressure is going to be important. The timing of your release is going to be important. But ponies demand a higher level of handling oftentimes than other horses because they're just so smart and so quick that they're kind of the masters in the universe. But once you prove it, once you prove your leadership to a pony, they'll give you everything. They'll just go, man, they'll fall in love with you because they see you more not as their equal, but in the leadership position. So I hope that gives you, the biggest thing I can give you is, you know, set your expectation with a pony. Just understand that the pony has patterns of behavior that have been inadvertently reinforced, and you're just going to, you know, shift your awareness. And by learning those skills that are offered on the DVD, you'll be able to prove yourself to the pony. And I'll tell you, once the pony recognizes leadership, any horse, once they recognize leadership, I've not had a horse that doesn't just go, wow, you're fabulous, I'm in love with you, what would you like? But that's our ability to communicate with the horse. So it's not a punishment thing. If you get into a fight with a pony, I'll bet $10 on the pony, on any horse. But if you don't get into a fight with them, if you just communicate clearly what it is that you want, and you learn how to do that through those videos, the pony will, again, recognize, respect, and respond to it. But if they don't recognize your communication because you're not communicating like another horse would, then it's really not the pony's fault that it has those behaviors. It just really doesn't know what else to do. So give those videos a try, and Mary, please email me and let me know how that goes with the pony. And hopefully I'll see you with your horses in Connecticut. I'm looking forward to coming back to the East Coast and, you know, being able to help some people hands-on with their horses. And thanks for the question.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and include Colleen's in this one, Karen, as well, in case you've missed something here that she needs with it. It says, my 8-year-old Mustang has begun pulling away from me, literally pulling the lead out of my hands as I'm leading him. He only goes as far as the closest grassy area, but I still want to stop this behavior. I find it interesting that each time I end one misbehavior, he creatively thinks of something else to do to assert his independence. Any ideas? And this is from Colleen in Colorado Springs.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Mustangs came up in the last explanation. And pulling away, pulling the rope through your hands. That's that psychic part there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, I recognize these things because they're very common patterns of behavior in horses and ponies, because they're again, those behaviors are inadvertently reinforced in us. Usually what happens when horses learn to pull away is that sometimes, you know, people think, well, it's from holding on to them too close. But it's actually, if we're not familiar with the position, the effective position on the lead rope, we actually, it comes from giving them too much slack. And so what happens is the horse or the pony learns to come in and put slack in the line. We don't automatically take up the slack. And then the horse turns, and then they get their neck in a position where they have leverage over you. And I've seen horses. I watched a mule one time with a good friend of mine, and that mule was so good at it, the mule we wouldn't even be asking the mule to do anything, just standing there. And the mule would all of a sudden just kind of look at their little wristwatch and go, you know, I'm missing my favorite TV show. take a step and a half towards the person, turn her nose, and just walk away. It wasn't even a big, you know, to do about it. Just walk away, and by that time, you know, she wasn't aware of it. She's going, hey, wait, oh, she always does this, and just pulled the rope. I mean, it was like pulling against a vehicle, a truck. You know, the rope just kept going once they get the leverage on you. So what I like to do is to take a horse that has that learned behavior, go into a smaller area to start developing this. But the cornerstone for communication, teaching you the effective position on the lead rope, to have an awareness of taking up that slack. It's about being able to make that adjustment, having that awareness that the horse is coming in closer to you and putting more slack in the line so they can out-position you, and being able to tip that nose back to center, back to where the nose is right on you, you know, before they get out of position on you. So, you know, depending on the situation, and again, as you start to do those things and asking them to do things for you, make sure that you're starting in a very polite stage. Oftentimes we go up to horses and we don't realize it, because I think it's because they're so big that we think, oh, we've got to throw a bunch of pressure. I'm going to ask them to do something, and now I got to throw a bunch of pressure at them. And we don't realize that sometimes, you know, we cause that animal to want to leave because they're confused. We didn't ask them to do anything, and now we're yelling at them. And we know how that feels as humans, you know, and especially as women. When we get under pressure, our instinct is to leave. You know, we shut down first, and then we just want to get out of there. So make sure that there isn't too much pressure coming at them either to cause them to want to leave. But when a horse learns to pull out of your hands, it can be a real tough one to overcome that. You almost have to be, you know, have cat-like reflexes to be able to prevent it. And if you can't prevent it, go in and start doing the things on the video, the cornerstone for communication. So in a smaller area, so if the horse does pull through, you can, you know, be in an enclosed area and the horse doesn't leave very far. The other thing to do, you can get more leverage on a horse and more line if you go to a 22-foot line. I hesitate to give that advice to people because oftentimes a 12-foot line is plenty of line to do this if your timing is good and there's not too much excess of line, you know, if the horse is staying close to you. So, but when I get horses that really pull away from me hard, I'll take a 22-foot line because then I have a little more room to allow it to feed. I still have a hold of them. And oftentimes the pattern is that they'll make a big jump expecting the rope to come through the human's hands, but they make their big jump, but I still have a hold of it and I can tip them back. And just trying to get that nose to tip towards them. The other thing is to drop the halter and using, you know, I have very specific design on the equipment that I offer for these kinds of reasons. But the thin rope halter discourages a horse from learning to pull on you. And dropping it down into a position that gives you more leverage on the nose to tip that nose back to you is an important piece, too. So there's a, you know, huge explanation for this, and it seems something very simple like, you know, leading the horse from point A to point B. But, you know, really so much can happen that horses and ponies and Mustangs and mules and, you know, all of them can develop, you know, and it can be pretty serious. Horse in California, the equine affair in California that I had as a demo, pulled away from the woman on a regular basis. I mean, she just expected it when it came out of the stall. And here went this horse. She was, you know, waiting to come into the arena, and I didn't know the horse had that problem, and she was standing outside it, or I would have had her standing inside the arena, but that horse got away from her, you know, on asphalt with in a crowd of people, baby carriages and, you know, buggies and people in wheelchairs. I mean, it was this huge big lane of crowd that was just walking around enjoying the show, and all of a sudden there goes her horse down the lane. And but those were the things that I did in that demo in a very short amount of time. That horse had no desire to leave. Because I you know, made sure my approach was fair. I made sure that when the pattern started to develop, when that nose went from, you know, an inch away, when the nose just started to leave, I was already coming across with my lead rope and tipping that nose back to center. So when they get the jump on you, you know, you've got nothing to do but just let go. You might as well just skip the rope burn and let go, because you can't stop them. But if you can just keep that nose facing center and giving that horse, remember that the only reason you put pressure on a horse is to give the release of the pressure to communicate what it is that you want. And I wish I could tell you everything in, you know, a teleseminar, but there are so many factors and so many things that really require a distinct feel from us to help the horses repattern this behavior. But it is a pattern that you can absolutely change depending on, you know, how you set it up and, you know, how you study it and how you go about it. But it's very common. It's a very common pattern of behavior for both the pony and the Mustang. But it can change, can absolutely change, and it needs to change. You don't ever want to see your horse, you know, tearing off down through who knows where, ending up, you know, however it's going to end up. So please spend the time and get these things right for these horses for the safety of yourself and others.
Okay. Well, thank you, Karen, for answering that. And Mary, thank you. And Colleen, thank you both for sending in your questions. And we'd like to hear back from you and see how that goes. So, okay, you ready to move on, Karen?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. This one is from Sally Carroll from Phoenix, Arizona, as well as Bayfield, Colorado. And she says, hi, Karen. You have worked with my horse briefly at a workshop in Durango. This is a 15-plus hands-high black quarter horse, a left-handed heel horse. He is mostly used for roping but well cared for. We are always gentle with him. When you worked with me at Santa Rita Ranch, he was very skittish about most everything, and we got him through hula hoops, ropes, and et cetera. It's been a couple years since that training, and he has in recent months started pulling away from the tie-ups. He has broken a couple of brass clips, so we changed to the halter clip that you sold me. This keeps him from breaking the halter, but he ends up lunging forward, which poses significant potential harm to whoever is standing near. Nothing in particular seems to set him off, might be anything. He is getting worse and now will not enter the wash stall, an old problem we thought we had licked, but he is balking again. He hates plastic bottles, and we put him in a small pen with lots of empty bottles, and he just ignores them. On one occasion, a full plastic water bottle fell from my horn bag, and he totally freaked out. We consider this potentially dangerous now and are looking for ways to calm him and desensitize him. We need your suggestions. He's about 10 years old now, so still young and a very good trail horse.
Sally said in there that there was something that she got. She said a brass halter clip. Is that what
well,
she said
it looks
in
like
there?
She had broken a couple of the brass clips, so then she changed the halter clip and used the one that you sold her. And then now that's keeping him from breaking the halter.
Right. But he's still pulling back.
And then lunging forward seems to be the issue. And that seems to be what's causing them some, you know, to be uncomfortable because of the lunge forward after he's gone so far off to the cliff.
Right, right. Well, I hope what Sally's talking about is it's a product called the safety clip. And it allows the rope to feed through, so it's not hard tying the horse. And there's different adjustments on it. So it sounds like if the horse is not breaking the clips anymore, then, Sally, you have it adjusted to where it is feeding out. So what I'm imagining from your description is it's feeding out to a certain point, and then the horse stops pulling and then jumping forwards. But if it's at the right adjustment, the horse shouldn't feel like they're hard tied. The instant they stop pulling, they should find their comfort right there without feeling like they have to jump forwards. So I have a little bit of a question there. If the horse is jumping forwards, if the feed on it is loose enough that when the horse pulls back and it feeds through, it has enough tension to trigger the pullback reflex, but it's not doesn't have so much tension that when the horse stops actually going backwards that the horse doesn't just actually feel released right there, because that's the design of it. Before this tool was developed, there was another tool on the market that I liked and used for a lot of years called the Blocker Tyrene. And I know Mr. Blocker pretty well, and I really appreciated the invention. When I switched to the clip, it was because on the Blocker Tyrene was before they put the magnet on it. And so a horse tied to it could fiddle around with it with its mouth and actually come undone. So that's why I switched the clip, and then there's more versatility, there's other things on it. But you can go on my website and look at the details and why I prefer it and how it's designed. So I would check the adjustment on that clip to allow that horse to really feed out when it feels the need to pull back. Now, the other thing that I would do with the horse is that I would do things to trigger the pullback reflex, you know, multiple times over and over to exhaust the behavior so that the horse begins to understand he doesn't need to push into that kind of pressure. So I would set it up so that the horse is tied, I have a hold of the end of the line, and I would go up and do things, not, you know, abrupt or come at the horse or, have the horse feel threatened, but I would, you know, take plastic or bottles, you said water bottles, you know, things like that, do crinkly things, just do little things that the horse would, you know, kind of maybe pick his head up and tend to push into that and trigger that, the pullback reflex. And make sure you're off to the side, make sure you're not in any, you know, way, in any position where if the horse were to jump forward, that it would, you know, trap you between the horse and the hitching rail or anything like that. So you can use, again, go to a longer line, to a 22-foot line, so you can stand, you know, way out of harm's way, allow the horse to pull back multiple times, you know, and again, make sure that that tension on that is adjusted in such a way that it'll feed out. Sometimes people look at it, how it's set up, and they don't look at the different settings and the adjustment. And there is a way to tie it hard. You don't want it to tie hard. You want it to feed out and allow that horse. It'll get less and less and less. And I have had horses pull back, be so extreme that they'd pull a 22-foot line, you know, all the way through. But then on the next pull, they wouldn't pull quite that far. And the next pull, they wouldn't pull that far. It would get less and less and less until the horse actually exhausts the behavior. So it really is the most effective approach and the most effective tool that I know to help a horse exhaust what is a very strong pattern of behavior, especially if the horse has done it for a period of time, or, you know, has broken leads and gotten released that way. I've seen horses in some of the most extreme situations where, you know, they'll pull back on something that will not let go. I mean, people get pretty creative and, you know, put in, you see hitching rails that, you know, you could tie an elephant to it and tie them hard. It is one of the reasons that I prefer to have a clip between a rope halter and a lead rope, because if a horse is under that much pressure, I want the clip to break. If you use a lead line that's come in and use a sheet bend knot on it, and you see a lot of people that say, well, I don't like a clip, I don't want anything to break. When a horse is under that much pressure, you risk something in their physiology giving, because they will fight and fight and fight. And that's what actually causes the fight in the first place, is when horses get trapped. They feel trapped. And they will fight through that. I've seen horses fight so hard that they'll lose their air at that and actually, you know, pass out at the hitching rail until they get their air back and wake up and stand up again. So, you know, make no mistake, it's a very serious, you know, pattern of behavior, but you can exhaust the behavior if you're just persistent with it. Do it every day. Whenever you're changing a pattern, if you can take the time, do it every day for 7 days in a row. If you will go out and commit to that, then you will actually exhaust a behavior for a lifetime. Every day for 7 days in a row, and then every other day for a couple of weeks, and then, you know, a couple of times a week, and then once a week. But just go out there and go, hey, what are you doing with your horse today? Well, we're going to go, you know, have him pull back until they really, truly exhaust the behavior. But it usually doesn't take very long. I've seen some of the most extreme horses really turn around very quickly because their release isn't in the pulling. Their release is when they stop pulling. And that's what that tool, the safety clip, the blocker tie ring has the same, you know, similar design, or even if you take a lead line and wrap it several times around a large diameter, strong hitching rail. That's how I used to do this before these other tools came out, and you can do it that way, but what happens is you risk, when a horse gets into a panicked mindset like that, they can pull across that loop, you know, when you've wrapped it around, you know, not tying them hard. A lot of times when horses pull back hard, a lot of people just go, oh, just don't tie them hard, just wrap the loop around there. Well, you can do that, but sometimes the angle of the rope that's attached to the horse crosses over the loop part that's around the hitching rail, and then you've got a horse that's tied hard again. So that's why I switched to using these other tools, because you took that factor out of it. You didn't have to manage, you know, what direction the rope, the pull was coming from, so it didn't crisscross and form a bite on itself. So those are the things that I would go about, and rather than avoiding it, I would keep doing it until the horse, you know, it becomes the horse's decision not to go into a survival mode, but to just trust the feel on the lead rope and know that their best choice or their better choice is simply to stand still. So that's how I'd go about that.
Okay. Karen, do you have any, you've got some great videos and things on your website. Is there anything that addresses this clip and how to use it? Or is that something you need to do?
Well, we have a series that is just about finished up in production that we're going to be launching here pretty soon, because, you know, the teleseminars are so helpful to people, but, you know, as I'm sitting here, you know, describing it, you know, my hands are going and I'm picturing these horses and I'm trying to get it across, you know, if you can imagine it in your mind. But if you can see it on video and see, you know, different horses with similar patterns and, you know, see how I go about that, I think it'd be really helpful for folks. So I won't promise any production time, but we're really working hard to get these out as soon as possible. So, you know, rather than me trying to describe it in, you know, 5,000 words or less, on a teleseminar, you can actually see horses when they're pulling back, the extreme, you know, behavior that some horses can have, and how to make that adjustment, and actually see horses go through that process and see how they actually, you know, it's like a transformation in front of your eyes, literally. And, you know, I do demos at horse expos all over the country and help horses at clinics all the time. And we have horses that pull back, or we have horses that, you know, pull away. You know, we see all these behaviors at every clinic. And I want to encourage people, if you have a horse that has trouble, please get yourself and your horse to the clinic. A lot of times people go, well, you know, I can't take my horse. You know, I'd be embarrassed if this happened. And, you know, it's so funny. People go, well, when my horse is better behaved, I'll bring him to a clinic. I go, well, that's like saying, well, I'll go to the doctor when, you know, I feel well enough to take a shower and put my makeup on. You know, it's like, you know, just get there. Whatever you bring is, you know, our starting point. And oftentimes, you know, so many people get there and they think, oh, I'm the only one with these kind of troubles. And it makes you feel so much better because you realize, you know, everybody has some, you know, sort of challenge or trouble, you know, even if it's things are really going well and now we're going to ask more of the horse. You know, it's the same thing. We're all learning this, and that's, you know, the pressure, the release of the pressure, and the timing of that release. And oftentimes when you bring a horse with, you know, behavior that's frustrating to you, it's really helpful to the group. People really appreciate that you brought the horse so that they can see what they might do if they encounter, you know, a similar situation. But it's such a supportive environment at clinics, and, you know, people can really get the help. Because if you didn't have this problem, Sally, if this problem, I won't say if you didn't have the problem, but if you knew how to sort through it, you know, everything would change for you and your horse. Everything sounds like a great trail horse. You're having a great time, you know, doing all these things. But what you're talking about right there, you know, is a very serious situation. I appreciate you sending in the question and you know, reaching out to get some help with it. But I promise I will get those videos out ASAP so you can actually watch it and see it, and see the change in the horse, you know, and so you can, you know, be better prepared to approach it with your own horse.
Okay. In the meantime, Karen, we kind of addressed the horse, but as I read this email, it sounds like there's quite a bit of fear. There's in the significant potential of being, you know, harm in the horse going forward. Do you have any suggestions for her as to where to stand? It seems to be with that lunging forward, her positioning, she's extremely concerned about when this is all going on. Anything to suggest for her? We've kind of picked up on what the horse is going to do. But I see a lot of fear, and we definitely, you know, knowledge will help that come into that clinic. But
right.
In the meantime, so that she doesn't get jumped on.
Yeah, hold the end of the lead line and stand off to the side. Stand off to the side so that, you know, if the horse jumps forwards, they're going to come towards the clip. So you're going to form, you know, almost a 90-degree angle. So the horse is going to go backwards, and so the line comes up to the clip, and then you're almost at a 90-degree angle off to the side. So if the horse jumps forwards, they're going to go towards the clip. You're not going to be there. You're not going to be in that vicinity. And it's really important to understand that. I think it was a couple years ago, and I was talking to a veterinarian about developing these videos and the horses that pull back, and I was helping one of her clients with a very difficult horse to, you know, give shots to. And she said one of the veterinarians in the area that they were killed in that very situation. The horse was needle shy, would set back, and then jump forward. They didn't happen to tell the veterinarian that the horse had this pattern of behavior. And, you know, they walked up, went to give the horse the injection, and they were in such a position that the horse crushed him against the hitching rail. And, I mean, it just all happened so fast, and all of a sudden, you know, you're attending a funeral. And it's a very valid you know, that pattern of behavior. So make sure you are out of that position. So minimum length on your lead line when you're doing this is 12 foot. Ideal, if your horse, if you think your horse will pull even further, go to the 22-foot ring rope. You'll see that tool also on my website, and go that route. So you could be, you know, way far away, you know, holding that line. You'd be way out of harm's way, and the horse could pull way back. But you know, just stay really away from the horse, and you can do that angle if you have enough rope. Even if the horse pulls a lot of line through that clip, you can stay in a position where you're out of harm's way, even if you're on the far side of the hitching rail. And also remember, if a hitching rail is too low and a horse has a pattern of jumping forward, see, it shouldn't happen with the clip. If the setting is set in such a way the horse can pull rope through it, they shouldn't be so close, but I've seen horses that will set back and pull back, and they can't pull any rope through when they jump forward. I've seen horses get their front legs up over the hitching rail. So horses can get in all kinds of crazy wrecks, and that's why if you're set up with the right tools, 22-foot line, using the clip, and go out there and keep doing it. Don't just, you know, sit there and hope it's not going to happen. Because that's what we tend to do, and I've done that myself with a horse that pulled back pretty extreme until, you know, one night he hadn't pulled back in, I don't know, months, and it was getting kind of cold, and I just reached across the hitching rail to get my jacket, to put my jacket on, and just that little thing right there just set him off, and I was just, you know, not even thinking, you know, because you don't know what a horse will do until you see it for yourself, or you know, somebody describes a situation that they've seen. And he pulled back so hard that rope came up into my ribs, lifted me off the ground, and almost broke my ribs. And that's when I kind of went, okay, I've seen this technique done, but I wasn't comfortable doing it myself. This is probably, I don't know, it was almost 20 years ago. I wasn't comfortable doing it myself, but I said, you know what, I have got to reach in there and help this horse learn that he doesn't need to do this again. And that was the beginning of my 7 days in a row. And I'd been told to do this. I'd been shown how to do this, but I was kind of at a spot where I was like, ooh, you know, I don't know if I really have skill to do that, but I just did it to the best of my ability. And boy, it was, the change was night and day for this horse. And I was so glad that I did that, because it was just like kind of, you know, sneaking around. I was always kind of on eggshells, trying not to do anything to trigger that, thinking, oh, this is my fault, I scared him. But what it was a pattern of behavior that kept getting inadvertently reinforced, because it would just happen, you know, every so often. So that's what we're really doing here, is we're learning how to shape the behavior of horses. And that's that approach right there is the best way that I know of to reshape that particular behavior.
Karen, it's also funny to, you know, see, you know, I see a lot of fear in this particular question, and it kind of leads us into the other one you started to talk about. But even sometimes as big as that fear is, there's a huge fear of coming to a clinic and getting the help. And once they overcome that fright, and they see that once they've gotten here, hey, this isn't so bad, and they move forward, they relax a little bit. And I've seen you in clinics many times, and I get a lot of phone calls getting ready to come to Indiana. And that's probably the biggest thing that I need to overcome with them, is just the fear of getting into a clinic situation and being in front of other people. And once they overcome that, then everything else just is seems to be just, well, bonus for them, you know. And
yeah,
this leads into a question I want you to go ahead and answer, if you would. This one's from Chris, and since we'll go ahead and answer this one, it says, "Hi, Karen, I'm submitting this question for a friend who I'm trying to get to your clinic in June at Travis Anderson's, but she has reservations. The last clinic she attended was truly a bad experience, which ended with the natural horsemanship instructor telling her that her horse was just too old to learn this. I've offered her my DVDs of yours and have sent your email on the teleseminar to encourage her to try again. If you could address this for her, that would be great. And thank you, and look forward to seeing you, and hopefully she'll attend as well." So we'll just kind of close that side of that up, if you would.
Well, that's a big question, but it's hard. I can't say it any other way. That is probably one of the most challenging things that we have with horses, is not the horse's behavior or shaping behavior or any of those things. It's getting over our discomfort of putting ourselves into situations that may not turn out well, especially if you have put yourself into a situation and it didn't turn out well. But it's kind of a thing where, you know, I relate it to, you know, I've had friends with children, and the child is having problems in school or behavioral problems, and, you know, somebody says, oh, well, the child is ADD or it's this, or, you know, throw a label on it or whatever, and the parent just goes, you know, I don't agree with that. Or, you know, they may have had a bad experience, but they're going to keep searching. They're going to keep searching for who can help them. And I've had people that have come to me after, you know, bad clinic experiences, bad coaching experiences, you know, people telling them, you know, to get rid of the horse, you know, everything that you can imagine. And they just keep searching until, you know, and I'm not saying I'm the best or any of that. It's just I don't believe that there are horses that if you have the commitment and you trust somebody who's been there, done that, you know, been on that journey themselves, that you can't move towards whatever your goal is with your horse. I just haven't seen it. And when the desire is that high, you won't let situations or people stop you. And so the question is then, you know, is your desire so high, if you want something so bad for your horse and for yourself, keep searching, you know. And it's not all, you know, great experiences and all that. And I'll tell you what, you know, people have had me in tears. People have had me frustrated. People, you know, I've hit the wall and gone, you know, maybe I can't do this, or maybe I have the wrong horse, or, you know, I've had all those questions myself. And so when people come to me and say, oh, I've had all these experiences, I instantly go, yep, me too. Now, let's see where we're at, and let's just take it, you know, what's the next step in the next stage. And people really appreciate that, I think. And that's why one of the reasons that I'm so committed to teaching, because it's not about what I can do with the horse. You know, it's about what I can inspire or encourage or, you know, redirect, you know, somebody's approach. And we're all doing the best that we can do, you know, including myself. That's all we can do, is do to the best of our ability at this moment in time. But no matter what your experiences have been, that doesn't give you, to me, it didn't. And believe me, I've wanted to quit. I wanted to throw in the towel and go, okay, I don't know where to go from here. And oftentimes when you get to that point, it's right before something is about to present itself to you. And I've had people, you know, pop in. They go, well, I don't know, Karen, and I'm just going to, you know, have a little peek, you know, at the clinic and, you know, see if I like her and that kind of thing. And they come and they go, oh, my gosh, I didn't know it was going to be like this. When are you coming back? And I go, well, I'll see you next year, hopefully. You know, I hate to have people miss an opportunity to come. And I have a policy in everything that I have, whether it's videos, equipment, clinics, whatever it is. If you're not happy with something, with a product or a presentation or whatever it is, if you're not happy with something that I'm offering, I'll give you your money back. There's just no questions asked. If you're not happy with my videos or you're not happy with the clinic, and there have been situations where people have got to the clinic and said, you know, this isn't for me. And I go, that's great. You know, I'd rather have you tell me and give me an opportunity to give your money back. But almost every single time that's happened, the person didn't come to the full clinic. they would kind of come in late and go, oh, well, you know, I'll miss the beginning presentation. And they kind of, it, almost every time it's like people who come in, and if you just popped into the middle of a movie and you miss the setup in the beginning, you just sit there and look at the movie and go, well, this movie isn't that great, you know. Or if you miss the end of the movie, you know, you don't stay to the end, you know, like, you know, well, so what? That was kind of silly because you didn't see how it wrapped up. So I try to describe a three-day clinic as like watching a movie. You don't want to miss the beginning because it sets the tone and the understanding for everything that we're going to do. And then the horses and the people really create their own clinic. It's not some cookie-cutter kind of a thing like, okay, we're going to do this and this and this. Every clinic is unique. You know, there's a structure to it, but, you know, the horses and people were living, breathing, thinking, feeling creatures. And so it has its own dynamic. And then in the wrap-up, when everything concludes, I go around, I make sure everybody has their goals met, their questions answered. I'll stay till midnight. I think, Melinda, at your place, there were some gals there, and boy, they were so keen. They were like border collies out there, and they were just asking questions, and, you know, we talked until it was pitch black. They had a dark horse, but I could see when the horse was licking its lips because I could see its pink tongue. You know, I mean, it was that dark out there. But we could have gone on, except one of them had to go to work. They're firefighters. But I'm really enthusiastic about helping people, and if people are not happy, you know, I do whatever I can to make that adjustment for them. But the hardest thing about a clinic is getting there, is making the decision and getting there. But if you go on the website, that's what I would encourage people to do, encourage you for your friend, is to go on the website, look at the testimonials, because I can't go up and go, oh, my clinics are so great. You know, that's silly. I can't do that. But if you talk to other people that have gone to the clinics and had those experiences, and Melinda, you know, I think it's funny because when you were saying that, you tried to get out of the demo that I had with you and your horse.
Do we have to go there?
Yes, Melinda, because Melinda, I met Melinda at the Hoosier Horse Fair, what was it, 2 years ago, and Melinda was bringing a horse for me, and the horse had some behaviors, and then Melinda heard kind of my background, and you had some impressions based on your experiences and different things, and so Melinda tried, I had a conversation with her that morning. She said, well, you know, I think we'll get you a different horse. I think it'd be better with a different horse. And he's not so bad. And, you know, the thing was biting. He was nipping. And I said, well, Melinda, when's the last time he tried to bite you? And she said, this morning. I said, okay, your horse is ideal for this. So you've gone through the same situation yourself. I don't know how else to do it except just to offer it. You know, to make sure the door is open, that there's a big welcome sign outside, but it has to be your choice to walk through it, you know. So all I can do is offer. If people don't know I exist, don't know that the door is open and the big welcome sign's out there, that's my fault. I'm doing everything I can to, you know, make my program accessible to more people and to help more people in as many places as I can, in as many situations as I can. But if people see it and they go, that's not for me, that's their choice. But somebody who really wants to help people, it can be frustrating for me, but what I've had to learn to do is to put my energy towards the people that do want the help and just keep putting it out there, you know, for more people to have access to the knowledge.
You know, last year in October during the clinic, you know, we had several that were hesitant to come and was really relieved once they did. And then once it was over, it's created this clinic that's coming up in May. 10 of those that went to that clinic signed up that weekend to go ahead. And I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I am having another clinic. So they overcame that idea. And now they've actually made me create that second clinic because they want to come twice. So
right.
if you can get past your own obstacle of your own self, and just get there, everything else will work out. So I hope she's listening, and I hope she goes ahead and makes that step. I think she'll really be glad she did. So Karen, we're getting close to time here, and I want to go ahead and grab another question if we can.
Sure.
This one is from Meredith, and she said she did do a clinic last year in Flagstaff, and that was with the Pony Club. And she says, well, I've been training my black horse, and he and I have done great and everything but the fox hunting and the cross country. And I know I can handle him well, but don't know what to do when he bolts. He sometimes goes in the direction of the other horses, but I push him past the other horses or push him into the opposite direction. I can easily take him away from the group and run him, but I have to put him behind a horse to stop it. But I don't get good results from what it is that I'm doing, so what else can I do to get him to stop?
Well, one rein is for control. And as conditions change, that level of effectiveness is going to reveal itself. So it's a real challenge when horses pick up on the energy of another group and you get out there, and especially into activities such as fox hunting or trail riding or anything like that, it really becomes a challenge because the horse's tendency, their nature, is going to be to listen to the herd of the horses. Their blood comes up, they connect with the other horses, and their desire to be with those horses is stronger than their desire in that moment to be with you. And that's their nature. That's how, you know, people get frustrated because their horse wants to be with the other horses. But, you know, as women, you know, we'll go to a restaurant and go to the bathroom together, you know, or we won't go to a movie alone. We have to go with our girlfriend because our husband doesn't want to see the chick flick. See, we have that same instinct to have that safety in numbers. The biggest thing to do for you, Meredith, is to take that level of leadership that you currently have and expand it times 10. Because when you're going into that kind of scenario where you're fox hunting and there's a group of horses, there's a pack of hounds, and you want that horse to go with you, your leadership is going to have to be beyond, you know, where others might need to be. So it's really a challenge in those scenarios, and one rein takes the power away. Something that I picked up from a really wonderful clinician, Brad Cameron, no relation to Craig, but Brad Cameron does mulemanship clinics, and if you get a chance to see him, it was really a terrific clinic because, you know, there's a wonderful saying that you have to treat a mule the way you should treat a horse. But one of the things he talked about was not just one rein, but taking the hip away, disengaging the hindquarters. And he did a lot of exercises with the folks with their mules, and they also have horses in the clinic. He doesn't make it exclusive to mules. But he and I got to talk just a little bit about that. And I said, you know, well, why wouldn't it just be one rein, taking the nose, you know, back to your leg? And he said, because he said, these mules and some horses can still go. They can still go at a dead run with their nose on their shoulder. And I went, oh, yeah, that's true. But he said, but they can't go if you take the hip away. And then that's when I started, you know, realizing that demonstrating leadership on the ground is one thing, and then demonstrating leadership up on the horse's back is another thing. Because now we're on top of this 1,200-pound animal that, you know, has its own ideas of where it needs to be. But when you're in that situation with a horse, when that horse is more connected to the other horses and you need to shut it down, I adjusted my teaching. That was probably 6 or 7 years ago, and I adjusted my teaching not just for lateral flexion, taking one rein, but pushing that hip over and having that horse actually disengage, and it's like disengaging the drivetrain, like pushing the clutch in on your car. You could still have the gas, you know, pedal to the metal, but if you have the clutch pushed in, the drivetrain is disengaged, and that's what, you know, pushing the hip over and disengaging that hindquarters is so important, and that's one of the pieces that you learned in the clinic, but that's where you're going to apply it. But I would do that before you get into the situation with the other horses. And then when you go on rides, go on trail rides with people, or when you're exercising your horse, you know, do little things to ride away from, you know, the other horses. If the horse gets upset, take that one rein, push the hip away, reassert your leadership from up on the horse's back. And, you know, just do that enough times that that horse says, ooh, you know what, I want to be with you. Again, the leadership is to get the horse even more connected to us and our communication. And so when I do that, it's not in the mentality of punishment. It's just, hey, I need you. I need you to be here with me. And if you have other ideas, that's okay. But, boy, it's important. It's important that you stay connected to me. So that's probably the key thing to do in that scenario before you get into the situation where you're on the hunt and, you know, the hounds are going and all those kinds of things. Put yourself in kind of simulations of those big experiences so your horse knows what to expect when they become challenged, because they get confused. The horse gets confused. There go all the other horses. There goes my safety and survival. And now I'm left here with you. See? And if you need to, if you get into a situation where the horse is bolting, or you feel the horse is really on the muscle and it's not going to work out, get off that rascal. You know, bend the horse enough to get it slowed enough and get down off that horse and assert your leadership on the ground. Again, not in a punishing kind of a way, but in a move the hindquarters, back up, come forwards, get your focus and attention back on me. And when you change the horse's physiology, you change their mental process. But leadership, how horses demonstrate leadership with each other and establish leadership, is by who is making the decisions on where their feet go. So sometimes running them doesn't necessarily change their mental state, because they're already upset and now you're putting them into a run, and it actually reinforces that. They go, oh, good, I feel better running because now I'm charging around out here because I'm uncomfortable. And that is flight is the number one reaction for horses when they feel uncomfortable or threatened. So running a horse doesn't necessarily change the behavior. Shutting it down by picking up that one rein and disengaging the hindquarters is a more effective approach to that. And even if you get it to enough where you need to step off and then, you know, people say, get the horse's attention back on me. But it's not, hey, look at me. It's, hey, I've got so much information coming to you. I want you to be mentally engaged to me. And some horses have a different level of connection to other horses. Some horses, you can get their mind back engaged on you quicker than other horses. But if you just take your time, you know, to do that and just keep chipping away at it, pretty soon you'll have a horse that just says, what other horses? I'm with her.
Okay. Karen, before we have to wrap up, there's another question from Bob that kind of goes right into this. When you're bending the horse, Bob's question was, when he bends in, the horse is trying to bite. So we're going to try to get his question in real quick. As you're bending that horse in, do you got any suggestions there what he can do to stop that biting, and it's happening on both sides?
Yeah. I'll tell you to that's a fun one, because it's a really kind of a fun deal to do with horses. When they come around, if they go to put their mouth on you, you know, lips, teeth, whatever it is, hold with your hand, hold their head in position, and just take your leg forward into the curl of their neck. And they can't reach you. They can't get to your foot. And so they could sit there and say, oh, I'm going to bite you, and you just go, yeah, go ahead, you know. And it's really an interesting thing, because it really doesn't take very long, and the horse has a pattern of coming back and biting. And sometimes what people tend to do is, you know, bump them in the nose or bite them. They go, well, I'm going to bite him back with my boot, you know, and things like that. But it doesn't really exhaust the behavior. And so when I ask a horse to bend, and I've had horses, that I've been riding and they've developed that pattern of behavior, and boy, I just put my foot up into the curl of the neck and, you know, keep asking them to bend, you know, to the left and the right side, and they just go, there's nothing here to bite. And it works really like a charm. You just take that situation and make that little adjustment. And it's not to say they're not going to try it again, but you just be at the ready to put your leg, if your fender or your stirrup doesn't allow you, if it restricts you from getting your foot up that far, take your foot out of the stirrup and put your leg up into the curl of the neck. And it's really a fun deal because the horse kind of goes, darn, it's not working for me. So that's where I feel like Dr. Phil is like, well, how's that working for you? And the horse mm-hmm. is like, well, it used to work good, you know. So
that's a new one. I've not
deal.
Heard that one before.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. So, Karen, I can't believe we are out of time. This has really gone really – we could talk all night long. So,
well, it's horses.
It is horses. So – and we appreciate you taking time out and joining us and talking horse.